The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
To the Lotus Place Radio Show tonight. It is March 15th, 2016, and we are inviting you to call in. We're doing an update on the Flint water crisis. It's Women's History Month, and whatever else you would like to discuss tonight. We have Delta Cougar on the line that's going to give us some hot topics. Delta, how are you?
All right. How you doing tonight?
I'm very well. Let me give out the phone number, Delta, so the people can call in. Let's give that number out, and you can go into some hot topics for us, because I know that President Obama selected his nominee, and then the Flint water crisis congressional hearings have started back up, and I know you have some more hot topics for us. So everyone, call in to 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. And the participant code is 549032. Press pound. And press *61 if you would like to share a comment. What do you have for us, Delta? Come on with those hot topics. I miss
you. Well, how everybody doing tonight?
Really?
How everybody doing? I hope everybody ready for a great hot show. Yes, we got a lot of great hot topics tonight. We got some great things that's happening in the world, and I am the one to keep you up on it, to tell you what's going on, because we got so many people have busy days, and they can't get out. Well, our first one is right here, and I got them all written down and with the town. Our first one here, we're going to talk about a mother in Jacksonville, Florida. And she loved to post on Facebook. She's a white 21-year-old mother from Jacksonville, Florida. And she loved to post on Facebook. And she loved to brag about her guns, like how many guns she have, and you know, just boasting and bragging about how she took her 4-year-old son to the shooting range to learn him how to shoot. She boasted and bragged and posted him with the gun. But make a long story short, she took him to the shooting range. And I guess they had a little great day shooting. So she puts him in the back seat of the car. And when she puts him in the back seat, I guess she did not strap him in. And he, while she was driving, he gets hold to one of them big old, do they have a 357, Magnum or something like that, the young baby got hold to. And he picked it up while the mother was driving and shot the gun, and it went through the back seat into the mother's back. So, now, who you think should be blamed for that? So now they is charging the mother with child abuse, child neglect, or whatever they call it, child abuse, whatever. They charging the mother for being neglectful. But I think, now y'all this may sound harsh, don't mean to offend or hurt anyone, but to me, she got what she deserved, because no mother in her right mind, a decent mother, would take a 4-year-old child to a shooting range and let him be around high piles of rifles and guns, and post it on Facebook and brags about how much she loves guns and training her kids to training her little boy to do these guns. So to me, that is totally the mother's fault. Then she put him in the back seat and she didn't even strap him down, and the young baby got hold to the gun. Supposing the young baby had to turn the gun on himself and blew his brains out, we wouldn't even be talking. We have another case in New Orleans where a grandmother, she lived in a bad neighborhood. She had a three-year-old grandson, and she let him sleep in the bed with her because she was in a bad neighborhood. And she took her grandson, and she had a gun under her pillow, a loaded gun. And she always kept it there. Her daughter said she always kept it there. And the mother was babysitting her grandson, and the gun went off. That black mother is in jail. And they're trying to charge this grandmother with first-degree murder. So we have double standard. But supposing this gun had went off and shot this baby, we wouldn't even be talking about the mother being shot in the back. We'd be talking about the baby. So that's something we really, really need to think about. We need to think about how you're taking your children to a shooting range. To me, this is absurd. This is pure D crazy to take a child to a shooting range and said that you're going to teach a child how to shoot a gun at 4 years old. So that's one of our hot topics. Do we have any comment on that hot topic? Do we have anybody else on the line?
I think that this may be icy hot. Let me just check to see. 1 second, Delta. Is this icy hot?
I got a comment.
Go ahead, Scotty. Go ahead with your comment.
This is James in Spokane, Washington.
Oh, this is James. I'm sorry.
Yes, ma'am.
James.
That's okay, sweetie. I appreciate you. I got a comment, and my comment is, you know, you shouldn't apologize. Well, I don't apologize for how you feel. You know, whether you feel like she got what she deserved or not, that's how you feel. And nobody could take that away from us. You know, we don't want to offend anybody all the time, but yet we get offended almost every day. You know, most folks don't understand walking in our shoes. That Indian prayer to walk a mile in another man's moccasins, that's not no joke. So, but I said that to say there was a situation up here in the Northwest that was similar, but the lady had her baby carrying the baby and was going to a store, the shop, a Walmart. And the baby went in the purse and got the gun and blew his mother's brain out, killed her. And again, it was in and out of the news so fast, I don't know what the result was. But you're right, there is a double standard about everything that happens when it's a person with melanated skin. You know, and it don't care what the culture is. If you're melanated, they got a problem with you. And a good example is we could take a look at what's the Dominican Republic, putting all the dark skinned melanated people out of the country, and leaving all the light skinned unmelanated people there. But again, I liken to Joe Madison, a brother on Sirius. XM, he has a show that I listen to every night that I'm working, because I work all night and it comes on at 3 o'clock in the morning my time. 6 o'clock in the morning, Eastern time. But the brothers say, what you going to do about it? You know, and we have to get to a point where we do something. If we don't make a change, Obama promised change, but there's not much change that I could see for anybody. You know, that was a campaign speech and a rally to win the presidency, and I have the utmost love and respect for that man. However, we're in worse situations now. We're hearing that so many men, women, and children getting murdered, these gun laws, and I'm not even talking about just African Americans. I'm talking about people in general. Murder has gone up for some reason, and it's, we must do something about it as a global family. That's my comment. I yield.
Okay.
Greetings, family.
Good evening. Well, I hope you stay on the line and have more comments for us. Okay, we have another hot topic. And to me, I want to hear y'all feedback from this. Because to me, this hot topic here, to me, I think this is police entrapment. And I think when police entrap a person in a situation, even though they may not partake in it, but I think if they keep egging them on, I don't think these people should be arrested. Okay, now let me give you the case. I may be wrong. This is my opinion. And that's what I love about this show. We have everybody have their own opinion. Okay, we have a mother. And this was in Louisiana. And the police, you know how they get on this computer and pretend like they talking to, they set up a sting operation for little kids, like if you are going with kids. Okay, so the police pretended to be a 14-year-old boy, this black woman who was 28 years old, was talking to the boy online, and they went to meet up. The woman went to meet the 14-year-old boy, black lady, for sex. And now they put her in jail, and they trying to throw the book at her. So to me, I think they shouldn't put her in jail, because to me, that's police entrapment. If a police get on a computer and pretend that he's a 14-year-old boy and he want to, engage in this woman, even though the woman knows this wrong and going to have sex with a 14-year-old boy and she's 28. But if you look how the police talk to her and entrap her, that's where I had a problem with that. It's the police entrapping them. He didn't just, it's the way that he led her on this. And so to me, I think this lady should be turned loose, because you got so many white women at these schools. We got several cases down here in my state where I live and surrounding states, where these white teachers are going with these students younger than 14 years old, and they giving these white teachers a slap on the wrist. And this is what makes me angry. They have double standards. And this is a double standard for this black lady. And I think they entrapped her. And I think that she should be out of jail. Maybe she should be reprimanded. But she should not be registered as no sex offender. I don't see that. I think that it's entrapment. And I think that she should be held accountable, but not what they're trying to do to her. Because these white teachers, lady teachers, they say they too pretty to go to jail. One lady who had sex with her students, they actually said this. They said she was too pretty to go to jail. What kind of message is this? Now, what is your take on this, James?
Well, too pretty to go to jail. that's very interesting. Well, when you talk about a double standard, what do you think would have happened if the sex was reversed? If it was a male 28-year-old and a supposedly 14-year-old female, the male was entrapped to do the same thing. Then, would you feel the same about that?
Yes, I will, because this is my problem I have with it. I have that the police, to me, is the one that's really the perpetrator in this. And the reason I say that, because the police is starting talking to her and engaging her in pretending like he's a 14-year-old boy. That's what I had a problem with. Even if the police pretending like it's a 14-year-old girl, that's what I had a problem with. I think the police shouldn't be on no computer trying to entrap nobody. Somebody, but not on there to entrap nobody.
But not only are they doing that private, they doing that. I've seen that on TV. And when a person comes to get the date, the cameras is there, the police is there, and they putting people on public TV doing that. Now, that tells me a couple of things. One, is they bored as I don't know what. They ain't got nothing better to do than to sit around and try to get people put in jail. Number two, they looking for ways to fill up these privatized prisons that they building all over the place while we sit idly by and still, manifest this ideology that, the white people is better than black people mentality. We got to grow out of that. Somehow we need to get deprogrammed and reprogrammed and see the value of our own culture, and we can't do that by measuring every little concern. I've been a community activist for over 25 years. And one of the things that bugged me the most out of all that I've done and participated in is the fact that we keep talking about a problem. I get so sick of talking about a problem, Dorothy. If we don't do something, then if you don't have a solution, how could a problem ever be solved? And I ain't talking about no marching and protesting and just voting. It's not enough. We're so far behind, in terms of the Willie Lynch speech and the mentality we have and how we treat each other. If you came up with the greatest solution that we could ever find or have, our folks, our family and our extended family would fight you and anybody who supported you tooth and nail just because of our melanated skin. Just like they did the black and white dog test with the children.
Yeah.
Which one is the bad dog? The black one? Which one is the pretty dog? The white one? And these are black children saying this. So how is it that our babies know that information so early?
Because they have programming.
That whites are superior and black is inferior. Well, yes, ma'am. So why do we continue to sit? And when I was in high school, and I graduated in 1974, which means I had to start at least in 1971, there was a young black man living with a white school teacher in my high school.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not new. What have we done about it? Nothing. Mm-hmm. And it has escalated down to elementary now.
Mm-hmm.
White women are taking out little boys. And I know you know the one that had the two babies with the prison and got out and got back with it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So again, when we don't have structured time for our children, we don't know what they're going through or what they do.
Okay.
When we send them to somebody else's school, we don't know what they're teaching or what they're getting or what's happening.
I agree with you.
Okay.
I think it's
Okay. I don't mean to cut you off. James,
I'm good.
You are so correct. Can you hold for 1 second?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm trying to see, do we have anybody else on the line? Hold on, James, but we're going to come back to you.
Okay.
Do we have Mr. Brown? Are you on the line? Would you like to have a comment?
I'm on the line. I came on late. What was the question?
The question was, Brother James, I was talking about, there is a case where a black lady who is 28 and the young man is 14, well, it wasn't a young man. And my question was, the police got on the computer and reached out to this black lady and befriended her like it was a young man, and then he started talking to her on the computer. Then he told her, I guess somehow the age came up later, where the young man was 14 and the lady was 28. And they went to meet up for sex. The lady drive to come meet up with sex with the 14-year-old boy. But what I'm saying, what I have a problem with, that they entrapped her. Why would the police take this black woman and entrap her like this? And my question was, why these white ladies who are on TV and been all down here where I live on the news, and they having sex with boys younger than 14, and one white teacher, this is the truth, look up the story, type in teacher too pretty to go to jail. One white teacher had sex with a 15-year-old. They said that she was too pretty to go to jail. So my problem is, why are you trying to throw this lady away forever and entrapped her? So I think the police, I think this lady should be set free. To a certain degree, I don't think she should be registered as no sex offender. I think the police is the one that we should turn the tables on. Now, what do you think about that, Mr. Brown? Because James had some good comments. Now, what do you think, Mr. Brown?
First of all, we have to understand what white supremacy is. Okay. It should not be a problem for us to understand that that is their system. Now, to reference to the 28-year-old woman, okay, why would she even be looking for a 14-year-old kid? I know we have to come to the conclusion that just because white people do something that's ignorant or do something that behavior is not conducive to us, we shouldn't be trying to copycat off of them. That's just going to get the same treatment. We know we're not going to get the same treatment. We have never gotten an equal treatment in regard to the law or any type of justice. But my problem is, what was she doing with a 14-year-old kid? You know, pedophilia is a spirit. And I just left a week with some brothers, you know, and we were doing some things, and that question came up about pedophilia. And I was looking at this, video, and the brother named Irritated Tina, and what he said was very on point. He said, we have to understand, we can't do what they do. There has never been an equal justice system for us in America. But we came here, they created that justice. they created their justice system for us. We were the first people to lock up in the prison around. So nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. You know, I remember when Obama took office, and I remember running into a brother at the mall, and I was dealing with some issues in my life. And the brother said, hey, man, said, you got a black president in there. We ain't got to walk past each other and don't speak. But I just know it, you know. I told him, nothing, brother, I was speaking before Obama even was born. Okay. We thought we bought that illusion. There's no equality in America for African people. We have to start creating that. They fed us that illusion of integration. We bought it. What did it do? It destroyed us. You know, I don't want to get on the religious kick. They fed us that too, so we bought it. There's a book that I just purchased called How to Make a Negro a Christian. That was written in the 1700s by the slave master who owned a plantation, who was a Presbyterian minister named Colcock Young. And in this book, what they were doing at that period of time was making sure that they were in control of our minds. And, you know, like I said, I'm not going to beat up on that stuff. But we have to understand in America, there's two sets of rules. They got laws for themselves and they got laws for us. Well, this woman is just 28 years old. You know, I mean, the internet is a dangerous thing. I use it only for information. All that other stuff on there, I don't pay no mind. You know, there's all kinds of stuff on there. But we have to be wise enough to understand why would a 28-year-old woman be trying to have sex with a 14-year-old kid? What was her answer when she got caught? Why was she trying to date a 14-year-old kid? Why was she trying to meet up with a 14-year-old kid? We have to deal with our own behavior, you know, because that's not conducive to our culture. And we have to restructure our culture to the degree that these elements don't have an effect on us like it's been doing. We have been hoodwinked to the degree that we are so messed up mentally. Now, you know, poor Dr. Frances Dresswell made that transition. You know, she taught me a whole lot about the mental illness of black men. You know, people like that, we got some problems that we need to deal with. You know, like I said, my question is, why was she trying to date a 15, 14-year-old boy? I would like for her to answer that.
Well, you know what, Mr. Brown, I hadn't thought of that away. Now, that is a good question. That's a good question. Now, let's move to another next hot topic. And I want y'all, now, Mr. Brown, now, this here is your field right here. This happened in my town in Biloxi, Mississippi, where you stayed at when you came here.
Right.
And we have a lady, a young black mother, who had three kids, and she was a single parent. She had a job. She was making $10 an hour. It's all she was making. And she was working part-time. And the lady got some speeding tickets. Just some speeding tickets now. The lady was arrested. And they put the lady in jail. And I guess some kind of way, they throw her boyfriend in jail too. And he was on a job making minimal. He was making $7 and something an hour.
Delta, can you just hold that for just 1 second while we take a quick break?
Okay, I'm sorry.
All right, and then you can come right back with that because I certainly want to hear that. So everybody just get your pen and paper ready to call in 641-715-3660. And the host code, the participant code is 549032. And we want to hear from you. And we'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
President Barack Obama will announce federal appeals court judge Merrick Garland as his nominee to the Supreme Court. According to NBC News, Obama will formally announce his choice from the White House Rose Garden Wednesday. Garland has nearly 20 years of experience as a judge and as a prosecutor, worked on the Oklahoma City bombing and Unabomber terror cases. In an email, Obama said, "In putting forward a nominee today, I am fulfilling my constitutional duty. I'm doing my job. I hope that our senators will do their job."
The Environmental Protection Agency manager who resigned over the Flint water scandal blamed state officials for the disaster during a congressional inquiry. Susan Hedman, the former regional EPA head for Flint, told the hearing she resigned due to false allegations that she had failed to react to the crisis. Problems with Flint's drinking water began after the city's supply was switched to the Flint River in April 2014. She insisted that state officials had failed to act on her agency's urgent concerns after they inquired about corrosion control in February 2015. Hedman said she learned that Flint's water wasn't being treated during June 2015 and agreed to a plan with Michigan within 3 weeks to remedy this.
And we are back. And Delta, you have a call, and you also have Icy Hot on the line. Would you like to take your caller, Delta?
Yes. Yeah, let's take our caller, and then we'll go back to that topic.
Okay. Call us from 779. Thank you for your patience and calling in. Do you have a question or a comment? Caller 779.
Oh, yes. Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I don't know, real historian. And I know, like, everything about us as a people outside of America. And the problem is we indigenous to all these places. So they basically segregating us. And we really wasn't these so-called slaves that came on ships. We were already here. And that's like an intimidation that they done set in our people's minds. And like the Gaza and all of that, and then all of that stuff is like these directions. They just basically, wherever they came from, they came through North Asia. They wasn't in Asia because we were there. And they just came in all these lands, and they just did this. Like, all them dates and stuff, that's not accurate. They just did this in the 1800s. And they switched everything around. And when they came here in America, we were called the copper-skinned Negroes. I mean, copper-skinned people. And this is really Egypt. And when I was coming up, they called this Little Egypt. And so as I studied, and I looked at the maps and everything, this is really Egypt, and it's the Atlantis, it was Antarctica. We've been here, and we have always migrated because of the flood. So we have to actually go all the way back. Like, I was watching a documentary, and it was out of Russia, and it showed some things that really turned my mind to thinking, wow, they like the Vatican, the Catholic Church, all of that is ours. Even when they went in Spain, at first they invaded us in Asia and Russia. But once they went in Spain, they went all over looking for us. And they always would say, we're going to take the gods down. And so, like, they say the Africans sold us. That's like all myth. Them Africans told them not to even come over here because we were gods and that we were wealthy. All of this, we had plumbing. We had, like, mega structures. There's a lot of stuff in America that's hidden. And, like, if we go to the Grand Canyon, they're not going to let us in there. But if you go in there, you got to see what I'm talking about. We have to focus on America because we're not like this African. That's just something that we've been programmed to think. We are people from the cold and mild region. The Caucasians lived in the area where it was like 9 months out the year warm. We got documentation when they went into Europe, and we started civilizing them. And they, when we did that, they basically took over. And they manipulated us to think all of this stuff. But every name that some people call themselves belongs to us. And the Gaza Strip and all of that stuff in Ukraine and Himalayas, we were there in Mesopotamia. All Europe, like when we get them, when we say they're Europeans, we giving like a whole heritage away when we do that. Because we are the Europeans, but they took the name in the land. When they were conquering us, every time they came somewhere, they changed their name. So that's why our people are so confused. Like the scriptures and stuff, all of that stuff, those were our black people. Those were our people. Everybody in there was biblical, and these people saying these names, so they make you think, oh, they're in the Bible. No, it's just a whole bunch of lies, and we got to figure it out as a people. And the documentary I watched, it showed them slaughtering our people that was in the church. And that's how they took us down. They found us last. They never came on American soil until like the 1800s. So this 1600, 1700 stuff. The Spaniards, which is Mexicans, they're not even the Mexicans. The Filipinos, they were all Negroes. Asians were Negroes. Everybody was Negroes. We are separate, different races from the Africans. We have A blood and they got B blood. We are the Egyptians. If you look up at the, if you really pay attention and look in the pyramid and look at how we look, you see us, when we left Asia, we were already calling ourselves Egyptians. And we as Kemet and the Africans as Kemetic, we taught them. And somehow everything has been hidden from us so long, people don't act like they don't remember or understand. Even the elders don't know this stuff. So I don't understand why we're not speaking on our land, period. Because when we don't, when we just talk about Africans, those were really like, we fought them. They invaded us. See, the Arabs, we the Arabs. Like, if you look at the map, it'll show you how Ireland, I'm sitting here with freckles on my face right now. My grandparents and stuff, like the kings and queens of Ireland, of Mesopotamia, Sweden, all of that, they were Negroes. These people, we started civilizing, and that's where we messed up at. We created this problem for ourselves, but we got to figure out how to get rid of the problem. But we have to claim America, because this is Kemet, and this is where America is so ancient and old. You know, these people study digging because they're trying to find themselves. But everywhere they dig, they digging us up, like fossil fuels and stuff. So I wouldn't even be surprised if those are not our ancestors. That they, this is bigger than what we think, and we can't keep talking about it. We got to do something about it.
You absolutely
because
correct.
I'm telling you for myself, it's a place, and I don't want to say where I'm from, but the Mayans live here. The Mayans are black. The Aztecs are black. These Mexicans are not our people. The Puerto Ricans, those Puerto Rican meant wealth and land. That didn't mean a people. That's just they taking names and calling themselves our names. Those names are the names they call us. Then they took some names, like African American. They started calling us African Americans in the 90s. not nowhere before. So, actually, Bill Clinton and Jesse Jackson, our enemy, a lot of people is our enemy, even within the system, even black people. So, we in the middle of, we caught up in a bunch of lies. And we gotta take our, we have to claim America and everywhere else in order to have better understanding. I mean, there's videos, YouTube, all over. Even bills that's been passed that for we us to claim our heritage, but we don't. We still live up under the system. It was two different things. It was the system and it was us, the indigenous people. So when they started creating jobs, they burned our people. We got segregated. It wasn't the slavery talk that they put in our head. They kept saying, if we keep telling them they were slaves, they're going to believe it. The real slaves was the white people, and they was 100% slaves. They came here on cargo ships. They came over here 500,000 people. And one time, it was so weird. My little sister is 5 years old, and I'm showing my stepfather a picture of us being in America and when they came on shore. The fake Europeans, white people. My little sister stepped out saying they still here. Y'all don't know about them. Y'all don't need to. We got to listen to the kids. We don't supposed to be eating this meat. Our people told them we ate corn. It's deeper than what we think. When they came here, they just started slaughtering us. They slaughtered billions of us and start calling us settlers. This is deeper than what people thinking. The Democrats started the KKK. When our ancestors signed them, we can get them for treaty laws. We can use the system to take them down ourselves. But we don't. Because we can get them for treaty laws. It was a treaty. We did a treaty with them. And when we did the treaty, our ancestors was murdered. And things was burned, man. It's deep, y'all.
We absolutely thank you for calling in. Don't let it be your last time. Continue to join us. Brother Brown, do you have anything on that history?
I have to
turn that one over to Brother Brown because we thank her for calling in.
Yeah.
And we ask you to continue to join us and continue to keep calling in with your thoughts and continue to keep calling in. But let's go back to this topic, and I want everybody to come in on this one. There was a case here in Mississippi, as I was saying, in Biloxi, Mississippi, where this mother, single mother, and her boyfriend lived together. The single mother had some parking tickets. She had a job making $10 an hour, and her job was part-time. Her boyfriend had a job making $7 an hour. They put them in jail because they couldn't pay their fines. But it's a law, and you may have to help me out on this one, Mr. Brown. There's a law called the energy law. I may not be saying it right when you're not able to pay. Okay, that is correct. And the lady went and contacted, but this is how it all started. The lady lost her job. She lost her apartment and they put her in jail and they put her boyfriend in jail for parking tickets. So the lady contacted the ACLU. The ACLU came to Biloxi, Mississippi. Y'all can be pulling this up on the computer. They came to Biloxi, Mississippi and filed a lawsuit on their behalf, like a federal lawsuit on their behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And they used that energy. What I'm trying to say is what they did, they made the lady, they made her and her husband, because really they said the husband now, they made her and her husband, they made their situation even worse, financially worse. So the ACLU says that they created this. The law is they shouldn't even be locked up
because they was on, they was energy some kind of way. They was not able to pay these fines. And there was no way they should have been even locked up, because what they were saying, the white people, a lot of them paid their fines. They was able to. And these people was poor. They didn't have the means to pay these fines. And so what the ACLU did, it said when they come in and they can prove that they don't have the means to pay these fines, they just barely making it, they supposed to have wrote that off the book, but they didn't. And that's where the energy, what I'm trying to say, came in. And they won. They changed, they came in and they won this class action lawsuit. These three black poor people got together and won and took on the city of Biloxi. And they had the lawyer that represented Biloxi, Mississippi, said, we don't want to take this to court. We want to settle. So they settled out of court with these three people. But these three little people that flipping burgers, young girl cleaning the hotel, made a difference for everybody. Now, if they stop someone and these people can prove that they don't have the means, they cannot put them in jail because they do not have the fine money. So what do you think about that, Mr. Brown? And explain that energy. I'm not saying it quite right, but I know you can explain it. Now, what do you think about that? See, like the lady said, we have a lot of rights, but we don't know how to go at them and use them. But this young lady said when she lost her job and they took her kids, and her kids had to go to her family member, and she said she slaved, she was in there in jail, and she was figuring out a way. She was refusing to let them get away with this. So what do y'all think about that?
Number one, I'm trying to get my part together. If you got some time, and you haven't made an arrangement to pay them, you know, and your time has lapsed, you haven't paid nothing on them, then they have the discretion to lock you up. One of the purposes of paying the fine was not to do jail time. You know, and if they didn't ever pay the fine, they could be locked up for not paying the fine. And it was meant to be a best interest to pay the fine. Hello?
Okay, now say that again, Ms. Wild. I didn't quite understand what you were saying there.
I said, when you're an immigrant, that means that you do not have money for an attorney. You have to roll with a court appointed attorney. And, you know, I mean, that's just for immigrants. Being an immigrant, that means that you don't have enough money to provide for a lawyer. But on the flip side of it, you know, if you hadn't found what they did, they probably it should have been for one for because you didn't pay them.
So now the law that they passed in Biloxi, Mississippi, and these three little working class poor black people took them on and won. And these, they are not allowed now anymore. The city of Biloxi, Mississippi is on notice by the federal government. They cannot pick these people up anymore without any money. If they don't have the money, they can't pick them up no more. Miss Hattie, do you have anything? Icy Hot? Anybody else?
I heard about that case, and I was very happy to see the people take that on, because that was the same thing they were doing in Ferguson, putting people in jail because they had all these traffic tickets, and that's been one of the main fundraisers that these cities and towns have. So that was very good.
So I thought Go ahead, I saw it.
So that was very good that they were able to bring that to the forefront and then let other
and
people
yeah,
know
and this is your, that is absolutely, and this is what I'm saying. We got, a lot of times we got more power than we realize. We just gotta be, we just have to be willing to step up and take on the fight. And a lot of times we are afraid as black folks to step up and take on the fight. But I applaud this mother, and they haven't spoke about it. I guess they've fixed it where they can't talk about it. Even though they won, I guess because they hadn't been on TV, they're not able to speak about the case. But I'm glad that they took them on, and they won, and they made it better for the rest of the people. So the Biloxi, Mississippi cannot do this anymore. And I'm so proud of these people who stepped up and took it on. And it was just like my case with my granddaughter. That what I was trying to do is take on and try to win the best way I could so I could make a difference for other families. But it didn't go my way. And that's what I was trying to do. And I applaud that family that say, okay, enough is enough. Enough is enough. So this needs to go around to many more cities. If people's not able to do this, we're going to call in the ACLU. I don't have the money. I'm barely making it. And this is what we need to do. As a race of people, we don't need to sit back. But now let's go on into our other hot topic tonight. And I'm going to have to turn this part of the hosting over to Icy Hot because I'm not really familiar about Flint water. And that's what they want to talk about. Me and Icy Hot, my name is Delta Cougar. And me and Icy Hot will be hosting tonight. And now this next hour will be turned over to Icy Hot, and she'll be talking about the Flint situation. So take it on, well, Icy Hot.
Okay, we could do it together.
I know. I'm going to still be on. I'm going to still
That'll
be on.
That'll be great.
But, you know,
but before we do
that,
is it okay? I want to ask one question of the sister that talked about the video that she watched from Russia. That was showing some different kind of history because many years ago I did study with some Russians and some of the very, some of the very expensive art in Russia was very different than what we would see in terms of mandala and things like that. They were of African descent. So the Russian art in a certain time period had painted some different, all of the religious type arts were people that were, you could tell, they were not of European descent. So, Fest Sister is able to, it would be great if she could let us know what video she was watching. So, thank you. That's what I wanted to say. Well, the latest on the Flint water crisis is that our great Minnesota Congressman Keith Ellison has requested some more funding and has a group of individuals there for the Flint water crisis. And it's just been quite, and I have not looked at any of the hearings recently. But the woman who did resign at the outset because they were saying it was her fault because they hadn't added a certain chemical in there to the water was very, very protective of herself today and yesterday when they were doing the hearing in Washington, D.C. is about what happened and who knew what when. But at the same time, the people are still there. They're still into some not good situations around the water. And we do have Sister Shira out there, Black Rose, and I'm hoping, and I'm not sure if she can talk about any of the updates, that that's one of the things that's important, is that we really kind of, as a people, keep that on the forefront, because that's happening all over this nation here. Like people are saying, everybody is scrambling now. A lot of the cities are scrambling now to figure out how they can resolve issues that they have, because people are going to be knocking on their door next. Because I know Minnesota, we have mercury in our water. And anytime they tell women who are pregnant women, you should only eat the fresh fish from the lake and what have you, because a lot of the people here that are the Hmong people, Native American people, and people that do a lot of fishing, and they eat that fish. And so they have to put warnings, and they get have little from the EPA and the state that you have to do that. So when you look at Flint, Michigan, how it was done just so cold-hearted to go into there and feed these people, have them drinking this water, and then to try to cover up the water with corrosive water, and that the water was not even being able to use industrially at a at the auto factories out there is just a travesty. But the governor is still governing the state of Michigan, even though he's poisoned all these people. He made that decision.
Hello?
Okay, so I'm just wondering if you have any callers on the line there that could that has any other information about it, or that want to make comments about it, or talk about something even that they have noticed about the situation there. And Brother Brown, I know you have some information too, I'm sure.
My take on it is, well, that was something that happened, and a genocidal effect. Nothing not against us as a people. Nothing is ever done about it. You know, it's clear cut that this water was the biggest water on the planet, that nobody did anything about it. And, in reference to this guy at the EPA, with the EPA chairman or EPA executive, providing them technical agency in the state of Michigan. You know, everybody should be wrong. Everybody. From the governor on down. See, these people, them white people are protected by something called color of law. That means that if you are in a certain political position in a city, or you're prominent in the area, then they're not going to do anything to you. They're not. They're placing somewhere else in another environment to tell them to go frisk them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they've been doing. You know, they're not going to get rid of the governor's permission. But they're going to get, because he's white. They will get rid of the brother up there. You know, because he's black.
Well, Don Early has said, I don't know that he has done a lot of speaking about it yet, but he was not the original person that made that decision. He came in after two other managers, emergency managers, did that. So it's going to be kind of difficult for them to pin that on him at this point. It still always go back to the governor, who brought water in to the state employees and told them not to drink the water, but kept pumping it in to the people and giving them what they were not supposed to have. And the fact that it's very interesting, the governor's wife has some stock in the water that's being supplied. I know initially, I don't know if it's still there, but you poison the people, and now the governor's wife's relationship to the water, that the bottled water they're bringing in, is quite interesting, to say the least. Mm-hmm. Serious conflict of interest.
Yeah.
I mean, did you set that up for that to happen like that, so you could make some money?
That's very interesting. I say that too, and others say the same. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back, and I'll share a clip, and we can get right back into the conversation here at Love Place.
Okay.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
I had made some previous videos while protests continue in Michigan calling for the resignation of Governor Rick Snyder over the contamination crisis his government has caused in the city of Flint's water supply. On Thursday, a large crowd rallied inside the state capitol in Lansing demanding that Snyder step down.
Tell you, this is just about water. This is about emergency management. This is about greed. This is about political corruption. And people either resign or be recalled.
The poisoning began in April 2014 after Darnell Early, an unelected emergency manager appointed by Snyder, switched Flint's water source to the long polluted and corrosive Flint River in a bid to save money. For over a year, Flint residents complained about the quality of the water, but their cries were ignored. In February, the government knew of tests showing alarming levels of lead in the water, but officials told residents there was no threat. That same month, an EPA official wrote an email to the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality warning about lead contamination. No action was taken. Then in July, Governor Snyder's chief of staff, Dennis Muchmore, wrote an email to health officials admitting Flint residents were, quote, basically getting blown off by us, unquote. Critics say Flint's health was ignored due to the political calculations of Snyder's Republican administration. One of the poorest cities in the country, Flint has a 40% poverty rate and a majority African-American population.
Flint residents now face the threat of a major health crisis whose full effects won't be known for years. Lead can cause permanent health impacts, including memory loss, developmental impairment, irreversible brain damage, speech issues, serious chronic conditions, especially among children. At least 10 Flint residents now have also died from Legionnaire's disease amidst the surge in infections caused by the waterborne bacteria. Experts say the Legionnaire's outbreak may be tied to the contamination. A study released in September found the proportion of children under 5 in Flint with elevated levels of lead in their blood nearly doubled following the water switch. State officials initially dismissed those findings, but the doctor who discovered them, Dr. Mona Hanna-Atisha, refused to accept the state's denial. County officials finally acknowledged the problem by declaring a public health emergency October 1st. On Thursday, Dr. Hanna-Atisha was named the head of a new public health initiative to help those exposed to the contamination. We're joined now by Dr. Mona Atisha, director of the Pediatric Residency Program at Hurley Children's Hospital and assistant professor of pediatrics at Michigan State University. This is truly astounding, Dr. Mona, as you are known. Can you talk about when you realized that especially children were being contaminated by lead and how the state responded?
Yeah, so in late August, we were hearing reports from the Virginia Tech Group that there was lead in the water. And when pediatricians hear about lead anywhere, we freak out. We know lead. Lead, as you said, is a known potent irreversible neurotoxin. So we wanted to see if that lead in the water was getting into the bodies of children. So that's when we started doing our research. And what we found was alarming, but not surprising based on what we knew about the water. The percentage of children with elevated lead levels tripled in the whole city. And in some neighborhoods, actually it doubled in the whole city. And in some neighborhoods, it tripled. And it directly correlated with where the water lead levels were the highest. So we shared these results at a press conference, and you don't usually share research at press conferences. It's supposed to be shared in published medical journals, but which now it is. But we had an ethical, moral, professional responsibility to alert our community about this crisis, this emergency.
And the research that you did, all it took was being able to go back in your own medical records. And it wasn't a series of new testing that you had to do. Could you talk about that?
Right. So we routinely screen children for lead at the ages of 1 and the ages of 2. Medicaid children who are on public insurance are recommended to get lead screening. So we had the data. It was the easiest research project I have ever done. So all we did was go back and look at our data, and we compared the percentage of children with elevated lead levels before the water switch, which was 2013, to 2015, and that water switch happened in 2014.
So talk about what happened after you held your news conference.
Well, that evening we were attacked. So I was called an unfortunate researcher, that I was causing near hysteria, that I was splicing and dicing numbers, and that the state data was not consistent with my data. And as a scientist, as a researcher, as a professional, you double check and you triple check, and the numbers didn't lie. So, and we knew that. But when the state, with a team of like 50 epidemiologists, tells you you're wrong, you second guess yourself. But that lasted just a short period, and we regrouped and told them why, no, you were wrong. And after about a week and a half or 2 weeks, after some good conversations, they relooked at their numbers and finally said that the state's findings were consistent with my findings.
You have bust this thing right open. And you were standing behind the governor and his people just the other day in a news conference, as you've been named head of, well, you can tell us what you've been named head of, but as they read the figures of people who are contaminated, you were shaking your head no right there in the frame, standing behind the government health officials. You were supposed to be standing with them, and you were shaking your head no.
Yes. So I am willing to work with anybody for the benefit of children. And I was at that press conference with the governor and with state health officials who we are working with now. However, they said that only 43 people since October had elevated lead levels. And it really minimizes this population-wide exposure. This is an entire population who was exposed to this neurotoxin. So when you say these small numbers, it just once again, the population loses trust, in government and in their ability to protect people.
Hello?
Good to get that background. Thank you for playing that clip. One of the things that people start doing when something comes out, that first they go on the attack. That's always the first strategy, see if they can shut it down further. And so that's exactly what they did to the pediatrician that was there, as well as the water expert from Penn State, who said that it was a considerably a lot more widespread than they had initially tried to tell people, and not trying to warn them. I think it was Professor Mark Edwards. Yeah, was his name. And then he was testifying also on yesterday,
And he really blasted the Environmental Protection Agency and the former woman that was their regional, Midwest regional administrator, Susan Hedman. And Susan Hedman is the one that had resigned earlier on because, mentioned a little bit earlier, that she was talking about it wasn't her call to put this treatment, this anti-corrosive chemical, which they said should have taken care of the problem. But at the same time, the water expert from Penn State said that's really not the only issue that was there, this taking care of this corrosive problem. The water was contaminated, so with this lead, which is, oh my goodness, great health implications for that community there.
Yes.
As far as other people, go on.
Okay, you know what, that is absolutely correct, and I'm so glad that Black Rose played that piece, because I saw that on CNN when the people from the governor's office and different ones were standing up talking, and they were showing it live on CNN. And every time they would tell a lie, that doctor would stand right behind them, and I know the whole world saw it because I saw it. And if anybody go back and pull that up, you would see the doctor in the background. Every time that they would tell a lie, the doctor would work her lip and shake her head and say no, to let you know on live TV that they was lying.
Yeah.
They was lying. So that's what she basically bust them out right on the national TV, and they was lying. And she showed the world that they was lying. And what I admire about this doctor, now we know this doctor gonna have some problems, so they ain't gonna let her get away with it. Because we know how they love to cover up stuff. This doctor, every time they said something she didn't agree with, and she knew it was a lie, she said no. She let the people know they was lying. So we all know that they're gonna go after her and try to discredit her. But I thank her for standing up for Black people and poor people and poor people in jail. Because because they are like that. And also I would like to say, I had a brother-in-law who lived in Detroit and Saginaw, and he worked at the plant. And the last time I was back there to visit, and it was over 10 years ago, when I went back there to visit him in his home, I could not believe it. Oh my God, it used to be so beautiful, homes and families and everything living in. Now this was in Flint. When I went back, y'all, it was like a ghost town. It was so eerie. All the houses, the beautiful houses on the street was boarded up. Houses, I mean, you may see one or two houses on a street that someone living in, but all the rest of the houses, I mean, they just boarded up. I mean, the more you drive, the more you see houses just boarded up. And they was already devastated with the car industry. Excuse me, with the car industry, now they're going to be even more devastated because people are not going to want to come and live where this is at. And to me, I think they have a plan to get the Black people out of the city. I may be wrong, but this is my theory.
Well, that's always it. Right. There's always that issue there. And one of the things that one of the people that they talked about in the hearing yesterday when Susan Hedman was going through part of her hearing proceeding, and Susan Hedman being the person who was the regional director of the EP there. And he said, there's a special place in hell for action like these. And he was talking about Hedman,
because, and his name was, and he was Representative Earl Carter. He's a Republican from Georgia. And he was referring to the fact that for months after Susan Hedman learned about the lack of corrosion control in the Flint water, which is from the river there, Flint River, neither she nor any other EPA governmental agency warned any of the residents that their water was unsafe. And he's absolutely right. There's got to be a special place in hell for somebody who has no more respect for human beings than that. It tells you what these people underlying values are of human life. The humanity and lack of humanity is just, you know, that's one of the fundamental things.
But that's what black lives don't matter, Miss Hattie.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, well, she got pretty blasted. And then she said, did they ask her if she ever considered giving the complaints that the people were complaining about, you know, the smell in the water, the taste of the water, the color of the water, and then did she ever consider making them switching back to the Detroit water from that Flint River, which everyone knew there was corrosive. All of the people that EPA and this one and that one and the other one. But when you have the governor, and people are starting to get sick, but when you have the governor saying you shouldn't do this, then, I mean, the buck stops there with the governor of Michigan. Rick Snyder needs to be answering to some of this in some kind of way. And like you said, Brother Brown, it is never any consequence for things like this. And our country can call and talk about the other people in the Middle East that poisoned their people, that did this, that did that. And this is one thing I always tell people. Every time I hear them talking about the inhumanity of other cultures, we do things, not we, but our government and the people, the officials here, do the exact same thing. Only difference is sometimes it's a slow death rather than, you're done. They want to debilitate you here and have you walking around like a zombie and not being able to think by slowly poisoning you with the water, as opposed to just giving you a dose of something that'll just knock you out, because they really would rather have you as some kind of human experiment. And that's what they're always generally up to around here in the United States of America. Some kind of experiment, particularly on poor, on black people, poor people, and people of color. Always another experiment for us. And I would venture to say I wouldn't be surprised if this was another one of their experiments when it boils down to it. And not just water. And like the people were saying, it's about this emergency management situation that they have there. And everybody is understanding that all of those, pretty much many and most of the decisions that have been made by emergency managers really didn't save any money to those cities that they have been in. And they were predominantly black. And the whole deal is, let's just take this out of the people's hands and let's just do this totally, totally different. So that's always part of the issue. Another American experiment. Brother Brown, what do you think? Any conspiracy here for an experiment? Mother? Donnie? Okay, are you there?
Hello?
Oh, you are there. Okay. Yeah, you're gonna have to hold on to that phone now.
Okay.
And I thought Brother Brown was still there. I was saying, do you think there's any likelihood that this is one of these, another American experiment on the poor people,
I was just going to tell you, Ms. Pastor, how I think it's just like the Tuskegee, Alabama.
It's beginning to look like it to me.
It's beginning to look like it to me because I saw a video where the little black boy looked like he was about 5 years old, and he said that he was talking about the whelp and how it was itching, and how he would go, his mother would take him to the doctor, and it looked like the doctor would put all these different types of creams and stuff on it. Wasn't really treating him by mouth, but he was giving him all different types of creams and stuff. To me, when you said what you said, that video immediately popped back in my head. And the little boy was crying, and the little boy wrote a statement. He's about 5. And the little boy wrote a statement. He said, I can't believe people treat kids like this. And so me, it's something up. And to me, you don't matter. Whatever I do to you, your life is worthless. It don't matter. I don't have to care about your life, so your life to me is meaningless. It's nothing. That's the way I see it. And I feel like where it's a poor town, they ain't got no big industry there no more. That town don't amount to nothing. And we not gonna waste no money on these poor black folks. Any way we can cut it, that's the way we're going to do. We ain't going to waste nothing on them. We're going to kill them. We're going to let them be crazy. Because all this is going to affect them mentally. And when you know anything, they're going to be, when they get grown, they're going to be in the jailhouse and in the prison. And they're going to be making more money for the white man.
Mm-hmm.
Now think about that, Miss Hayes. I mean, Ice is Hot. Think about it. When that's all they're gonna do is when this lead is gonna make them not be able to think right, make them not be able to function right, make them, not be, their IQ level is not gonna be so high. So next thing you know, I hate to say it, it's gonna be jail and drugs, and next thing you know, they're gonna be pumping them round down to the prison pipeline.
Right, could be. You never know. It is such a vindictive kind of a situation when people poison children, families, a whole community at this level and on this capacity. But I was also thinking about what you were saying and agreeing with that. There must be some kind of level of accountability for these government officials. And yes, what should they be doing now? How can't they help the people? And
I think they should come in. And why President Obama hadn't went to Flint and said something? Why he hadn't went to Flint and said anything? Why?
Hey, well, don't ask me, but I can tell you there is, like I said earlier, a group of lawmakers that are.
But to me, see, like my president should be there. Don't just say,
they don't usually get involved in these kinds of, I guess, situations with states, because you have.
But this is.
You have states' rights.
This is killing a community. This is killing a whole community. So to me, the president have a right. He's the president for all the people, not half of the people. And if they can't get it together, he's supposed to me seem like to be able to go down there and step in and put it in order.
Well, I would agree with you. There should be some heavy-duty involvement out of that government extension of the health and well-being for every citizen of the country. But the hearings are part of it, I think. And Elijah Cummings, he's a Democrat from Maryland, at the yesterday hearing, he agreed that they should have done more. He said, but also he blamed the state authorities of Michigan for failing to act. And he said, conceptually, we need less EPA, not more, he said, but he said.
Well, if they didn't act, then if they ain't act, they didn't do their job. Well, what are we going to do about it? A couple people resigning, that ain't nuts. Then you got Reverend Pinckney in jail for fighting for people's rights and trying to make a difference and try to vote out these crooked politicians. And here this man is in jail for serving 10 years for planted evidence, I believe. So what are we going to do? They're Reverend Pinckney. And now
these
politicians is not going to do anything.
Yeah, it's nearly unbelievable how many bad decisions were actually made at this. And this is what that hearing was talking about, too. And he was really angry at Don Earl Early, because Early was the one that just again.
You're absolutely correct.
Just on it, not trying to do anything about it. And once you found out about it,
And Ms. Hattie, now the people from your state, now what are they planning on going to do? Are they not only going for moral support? Are they going for financial support to help take water? What are they trying to do?
Oh, this was not people from my state going here. He is our congressman. Our congressman is in Washington, D.C. The congressman is leveraging funds to do something with the situation there. I mean, I think they've already made quite a few attempts there to help out with the water situation, even before that, even the Detroit. Remember I mentioned to you guys that I would be willing to bet sooner or later our congressman here in Minnesota would be doing something, because he's one of the founders of the Environmental Justice Advocates of Minnesota. And so we all started an advocacy here around these kinds of issues, just all over particular inner city and all those kinds of things. So I know that's something that's near and dear to his heart, that he would eventually take part in.
He's
leveraging funds from Washington, D.C., to help them out. And this hearing, though, they were talking about, well, what's supposed to come next? So in other words, what are they going to do about the situation? By now, there should be some comprehensive plan coming through the governor's office as an emergency plan of some type to figure out what are they going to do, how they're going to handle that, so that that place does not become another Love Canal back in the 70s, where this became a place where, you know, you could no longer be there. You know, everything is contaminated with the water situation being what it is. And so they may be, and I can tell you if anything is happening to switch it over yet, why hasn't it been done to switch it back to the Detroit water supply system rather than the Flint River? And that's the part I don't even understand, or a plan even to get rid, because that's not the only problem, is that plus they still have the pipes that need to be replaced. The people's water there, and some people have replaced their pipes in their home, but if you don't have the, if the pipes haven't been replaced,
yeah,
it comes,
it's still coming
up to the home,
the
then you still have these same problems with that water.
You're absolutely correct. They ain't doing that, but it's going right back up to you change the pipes in your home, but the pipes the is still coming from the river.
Mhm.
So and then it's still coming in to them corroded pipes, as I saw on TV. Now y'all know I'm always looking on the news. I saw on the news and they was talking about how these pipes, and they showed the water coming out, and the water was so brown, y'all. Oh my God, it was so brown. So imagine if you ain't taking care of them pipes, and all that's coming up through the main pipe. So that means the people can change their pipes down at their house all day long. But
yeah,
ain't nobody still taking care of the kids. And so I appreciate everybody who's off going and trying to get something doing. It's time for a change. It's time for as people as a whole, as black people, and Brother Brown is one of our biggest advocates. He's always telling us about these church folks, and he's telling the truth. A lot of these church folks up in Flint, they need to get together and start reaching out and tell them, hey, let's protest, let's put pressure on them. Let's do something about this. Don't just not do anything. Make us some signs. Get us some attention. We want people to see and have some of the kids there that's got the reps and the sores on their back. Let people see what this is doing to the kids. And
all right.
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I'm driving. I had to stop and I had to have a quick stop and go to the bathroom. You know, one of the problems that I have with this whole situation is nobody has charged these goddamn people, excuse my language, with environmental racism. We have not had, what I'm going to do in the county that I live in, because we have a high degree of ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. One of the elements that I have researched is that this stuff comes from late. And people don't see that. About 7 years ago, I tried to get these kids tested up there. And, then I went into the school system, I did some research. They have a high degree. So a lot of older houses where these kids live at, you got lead-based paint on them. Some of these houses were built in 1900. I was living in a house like this. It was an old house. It was so old there was no crawl space underneath the house. You know, so when you got these kind of issues, and you know what they're doing, you know, like, it's clear cut. It's very clear cut. This is environmental racism. I have not heard that little house Negro say anything about environmental racism. People talk about LGBT, people talk about all these other things, you know, they talk about Jewish reparations, they talk about all of that. They're not talking about environmental racism that has phased out people for the last 8 years that you've been in office. And none of the federal authorities have talked about it. And I'm telling people right now, we got to watch Hillary Clinton. I told y'all she's going to be the president. You got to watch. Because her and Bill, they ain't no joke. They are not a joke. They're very dangerous. I mean, we can't. We don't have the power to tell these people not to run, but we don't have the power to say we don't run, because there's already experts on who's going to win. You know, but the problem I do have is that these black churches are doing the same thing to her that they did with Margaret Sanger. If people don't know who Margaret Sanger is, and Hillary Clinton,
yeah.
Yeah, the That's her hero. Dr. Sang is her hero. Mm. And she was the one that started Planned Parenthood. She said, black people, you get stronger. That's exactly what she said. And you know, when you look at what happened in 1968, that was the first year that Planned Parenthood came to the school of economics. And they started, you know, giving our young black men, they start giving them birth control about the birth of their parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would start waiting, and before that, it was eugenic. So, here we are in 2016, and you know, you got this Negro out there in these churches, and I'm not talking about it because, but this woman planning. Man, like a fine tune piano. And we mm-hmm. need to look at her. We need to be aware of her. But I'm going to Detroit, first of the day. And I got some partners up there and asked me to come up there. So just look around at some of the situation. Because one thing I told you this week years ago, they created NAFTA under the Bill Clinton administration. I had a, you know, we had a poor plan in our position that used to make the F-150. And there was a lot of issues. They got the plan that was handled by the work. And a lot of people that grew up with worked. And when NAFTA came through, you know, they shut that whole plan down. And move the plant to Mexico. The majority of the trucks now are made in Mexico. How can we sustain our economic and black America if we don't have some type of, you know, way to create, way for jobs to be created for us to sustain our business? I mean, the definition of the people, we're going to have to do what our ancestors did back when times of segregation, when they had Rosewood and they had Black Wall Street. We're going to have to start separating our blood. We're going to have to. That way, we will have organizations such as my own and others that can rise up and have these organizations to protect our community from environmental racism. And bring charges against the government. We're not going to do anything until we economically become self-sufficient. Nobody listens to us. You know, about 8 months ago when, you know, me and the sheriff was talking, you know, I said, well, you know, when they killed Eric, what did they, Arizona? I said, they're going to keep killing. I said, that's not, whatever happened, that's not going to stop anything. And they kept coming. And they still kept. But we have to pray for those people in Michigan because, you know, sometimes when they do these class action lawsuits, the lawyers make all the money. The more people they get, the less money they get. And every family that was affected needs to be given $1 million by the federal government. Every family. I got a case right now where Joseph White with this young man. This young man was in a stressful situation. His mother died first, came back to and he's living in D.C. You know, he transferred down here. He was a sales executive for Joseph White. He'd been there for 9 months. Came to Virginia. They put him in the back room. He showed him a sales executive. He said, I'm not supposed to have it. You know, racism against us becomes an economic justice. our own business, buy from ourselves. I don't care if we ain't selling them. Oh, I ran across some shirt that I just put on the Facebook page. There's a black couple, there's a black owned couple that makes toilet paper, paper towel, you know, stuff like that. And it's black owned and black out. And
that's good. I'm gonna try to contact them, Mr. Brown.
Yeah, I'm driving right now. I can't tell it to nobody. As soon as I get home, I'm gonna send all of y'all. Just gonna send all y'all to the website.
Yeah, your phone is getting kind of poor reception there right now. It's kind of.
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Well, we're hearing you, but it's kind of distorted. The sound is.
Okay, I'm in the country.
Right, that's what I thought you were. But also, we want that Martin Luther King DVD that you were gonna reproduce.
Oh yeah. I just haven't had time to make one. I know the one, you know, and I got a couple of more that's very, very. I got two. I got about three of them. I got the Francis Press Wilson. The one I love the most is when she debated Dr. Shock.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, the way that she did it was, she was a brilliant woman. She never lost her composure. You know, in all of her lectures, if you look at them on YouTube or anything like that, I don't care what happened, she never lost her composure. She was one of the calmest persons that I've ever seen on the side of the planet. She never lost her composure. You know?
Wow. And
she debated him, and you know, all of the things that he was trying to say that was negative, she was hitting him where it hurt at. He couldn't answer none of it. He couldn't answer none of it. Just like when Dr. Joseph Ben Yochanan, he debated one of these rabbis. And, you know, the rabbi was telling him this about you, this about you. So he proved it to him. He said, well, where did y'all come from? You know anything about Caesarea? You know, then he put one on it. He said, well, Christopher Columbus is here. And a lot of people don't know that Christopher Columbus. That's why they had the Spanish Inquisition. They were taking people that were supposed to be Jews and they would kill them. So what they would do, they would join the Catholic Church and they would hide their religion from you. Christopher Columbus was a Sephardic Jew. You know, but I say that to say this, we have had some brilliant scholars come through and drop bits of knowledge, you know, and we have to take that knowledge to heart. We have to utilize what Carter G. Woodson said. You know, he made a statement. He said, when we go to college, when we go to these schools of training thought, what do we bring back to our community? That we, instead of us opening up, going to the stories our fathers and our grandfathers had that sent us to college, we go right around and do the same things we did in slavery. Go right away for white folks. We want a Mercedes. We want all these luxurious things, but we don't have consciousness of self because of self-help economics. You know, when Marcus Garvey came here, he came here with a number of cardboard suitcases, created one of the world's largest organizations for African people. He had a chapter on every piece of land on this continent. I mean, yeah, on the earth, there was a chapter of Marcus Garvey's UNI, you know, and he was sabotaged. His main thing was to show black people how to economically empower themselves. And that's the only thing that's going to save us. That's the only thing that's going to save us. Because, you know, the doom and gloom of our people is that we, the leadership that steps up to the plate 90% of the time is paid in poor leadership. You don't have real leaders, you know, and people, and they keep putting people in the media limelight that we didn't choose. Nobody never choose that shot. Nobody never choose the other guy. You know, these people were paid more than paid for. We need real leaders that go like we used to do back in the 60s when I was in the background. Knock on people's door. Campus these neighborhoods and see what the people's problems are. You don't see it anymore. You don't see men taking up for women anymore. You know, the black man does not know the significance of having a black woman. They run to the arms of these white women, and they fall off, and they give them all these biracial children, which I'm not against. But you need your own people. And most of the time, they leave our women are hurt. Our women need to be loved. And you know, we can't continue to disband. Our women, we were put here to protect them. And we're doing a very poor job of it. And I'm hard on men because, you know, I have trained a lot of young men to be.
And they love a white woman. Wait a minute, Brett Brown. I'm going to cut you off and go right back. Don't let them make some football money. The first thing they're going to do when they make some football or some kind of sports money, they're going for a white woman on their own.
They're going for the white woman. You know, because they think, now this is the mentality that they have. They think that the white woman is a trophy. You know, like you ride in a regular car all your life, and you get a job, and you say, wait a minute, I can buy me a brand new car. And every time I turn around, you got a rag on that car. It's like a choke. But that's what these fools do. Like jumping up here, going to get the poorest woman they can find. They never get one that's already got no money. They get some of the poorest women they can find. They have three babies, and then she get all the money, all the alimony, all the jobs. Then they broke again. You know, and you know that we have changed the money.
What make me mad, Adam, they just act like that our people is nothing. Like they act like when they get the white woman, the black woman is nothing no more.
Well, that's what slave mentality do. Because they learn that from their enslaved. You would bring them in the house when the master gone to get some more slaves, and they go ahead and have sex, and she tells you better not tell it, because I'm going to tell them you raped me. They always had a strong desire for the black man. Because the white man never liked it. He treats women like they're animals. He come from a patriarchal society, which means men rule, women don't have no voice. You know, and in that patriarchal society, they had no respect for women. But if you take our society, prior to our enslavement in the Western Hemisphere, the woman was, we have a matriarchal society. The woman was a goddess to the kings of Africa, black men in Africa. Because we knew what her presence was. We knew that this, she was put here, you understand, and not just bad children, but that's how you continue to build your nation. You can't build your nation without offspring. You can't build your nation if our women don't have children. And that's why, you know, I put a couple of posts up about Hillary Clinton and Marvin Sanger. I want these women to understand what we are dealing with. You know, we're dealing with a dangerous system. But I do know one thing. I thank the creator that I serve for this radio station, because it has allowed me to open up a lot of people's eyes. It has allowed me to, you know, converse with people that have learned and that are trying to learn. And, you know, we need this.
And you absolutely correct, Brother Brian, because I learned a lot from you. Aisha Hat, Black Rose, I learned a lot from a lot of y'all. Because if I don't know something, I tell you, wait a minute, let me get Mr. Brown, that's out of my field. Or, wait a minute, I don't know that. Let me get Aisha Hat. Let me get Black Rose. I'm not ashamed, because that's where we learn it.
That's, and we have to understand that we need to continue to utilize those two. You know,
if you ask me something about child stuff, I can give you what the little I know that I learned the last 4 years.
I'm getting ready. I'm almost ready to start my school. I got everything set up. I'm just waiting on this billing. See how much you guys will charge me for rent. But I'm gonna do it because, you know, anytime you have little boys in the eight years old, 9 years old, and they can't read because they might have ADHD, or they can't point about itself. We can't continue to accept that behavior for our children.
Brother Brown, I don't mean to cut you off, but since you said this about school, let me ask you this and your thought on this, because we don't have but a few minutes left. Did you see the video, and it's all on CNN, first I saw it on Facebook, but then it made the CNN news. And I was really shocked. There was a young black girl, she was 15, and she had severe problems with her eyes. So the young lady had to have surgery on her eyes. And she returned back to school, and she had been having multiple problems with her eyesight. So she returned back to school, but her mother gave her an iPad because she told her mother how the teacher just low-rated her, this young, little young black girl who's 15. And so the young lady turned the iPad on, and the teacher was telling the young lady, she was telling the man that she couldn't see because of her eyes. And the teacher told her, you stupid, you black, you ignorant, you ain't, no, he didn't call her black. He called her, you stupid, you ignorant. You ain't gonna never have nothing. You ain't gonna never have nothing but have sex and a whole bunch of babies. I've been a teacher, and I ain't never saw nobody as stupid as you. And her mother came on TV, and the mother was crying so hard, and it just touched me because the mother said, my daughter has a problem with her eyes. Where she, you know, she's struggling with her eyesight. And they had surgeries and things on the eye. But then I was thinking that this was going to be a white teacher. And Brother Brown, this was a black man, told this young lady she ain't going to be nothing but good for having sex and having babies and how dumb she was. And I'm thinking about you opening up your school to deal people up and hear this man tearing people down.
Let me ask you a question. Did she have, was her father in her life?
I didn't see a father. Only thing I saw, Brother Brown, was a mother and a grandmother.